Good evening. That was the Beach Boys, All Summer Long, from their album The Beach Boys Greatest Hits. This is WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. This is the program where we are at. Just give me a moment here for station identification.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Elliott Counseling Group, who offers compassionate mental health care to individuals of all ages. Elliott Counseling Group serves Central Illinois with in-person and online sessions. More information is available at ElliottCounselingGroup.com. That's E-L-L-I-O-T-T, Counseling Group, no punctuation or spaces.com, or by phone at 217-398-9066.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Minuteman Press. Whether you need signs for an event, thousands of full-color flyers, or personalized promotional items, Minuteman Press can make it happen in time and on budget. They offer an extensive line of products as well as design services. Minuteman Press may be reached online at cuprinting.com, in person at 905 South Neal Street in Champaign, or by calling 217-355-0500.
And as I said, my name is Ben. This is the program. This is where we are at. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker, and don't necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. And just a reminder, as I've been trying to advertise those, there is a whole new way to listen to WEFT. You can listen to us live on you can listen to us live on the radio, but on here and online. But we have an app where you can view playlists, archive programs such as my show where we're at, food programming and radio theater, and all of our wonderful great shows. And the WEFT app, you can listen to it live audio stream, view the air and up next programming, and connect to community partners and more. And I believe you can leave feedback. It's on Apple Store and a Google Play Store. So if you have an Apple or an Android phone, it's a whole new way, to listen to WEFT. Just a quick weather report. It has been quite a few hot ones. Of course, it's been a hot summer. There is a chance of scattered thunderstorms, according to the weather radar here. Let's see if I can pull up the radar here. See, looks like a very high chance of thunderstorms around 7 p.m., so right at the end of my show. There's some severe weather. It's definitely going to, looks like it's definitely going to get here around 7, so 7 p.m. to and after 8 p.m. Expect some thunderstorms, 8 p.m., 9 p.m., all the way through 10 p.m., rain and thunderstorms and showers. In terms of heat, it's still going to be pretty hot. 87 tomorrow is the high. 88 it will be the high for Wednesday. 91 will be the high for Thursday. 92 for Friday. And then 92 for Saturday. So it'll be, again, another pretty upper 80s, up into the 90s, at least later this week. So I hope you are keeping cool. It was almost 100 at the at the at the there was a protest at the Champaign courthouse on this past week. I believe that was June 25th. That would have been Wednesday. This previous Tuesday, at the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees gathered to picket outside the Champaign County Courthouse. They said that the major this is a piece I'm reading from Jack Krum from WCIA of the AFSCME workers protest. Warns of a possible strike, so they voted to go on strike of by a vote of 96% of votes in favor of a strike if necessary. So they haven't gone on strike. They have voted in favor of possibly going on strike if they are do not reach a deal on a contract. Quote, when the worker, this is, I'm going to read this quote, when the workers don't show up for the courthouse, how is court going to happen? You know, if animal control isn't there, how are the animals going to be taken care of? How are the citizens of Champaign going to be taken care of? Said Cecilia Phillips, local AFSCME president. It's not something we want to do because we all love our jobs. We love what we do, but it's also important at the end of the day that we go home and put food on our tables. There are two more planned mediated negotiated sessions. Phillips said if a new contract isn't done by then, a strike could happen. And this is some of that protest from last week of the AFSCME rally that I got here. The audio should be queued up. So this is the AFSCME protest that was last week.
Who's got the power?
We got the power.
What kind of power?
Union power.
Who's got the power?
We got the power.
What kind of power?
Union power.
Who's got the power?
We got the power.
What kind of power?
Union power. Woo-hoo!
Next up, we have supporter, president of AFSCME Local 981 at Eastern Illinois University and a member of the AFSCME Council 31 Executive Board, Kim Poof.
How can you not feel that way? But we are not numbers. We're people. with families to support and bills to pay. We are parents, caregivers, community members, neighbors. We are human beings and we deserve to be treated with respect and not like line items on a budget.
Amen.
The AFSCME workers of Champaign County do real work. They do the work that is crucial to the functioning and safety of this community. They show up every day doing the real work.
Everything.
The many areas every, of this county
every
run
raised, was raised that way.
And for management to push them to every the brink of a strike is not just shameful, it's disrespectful. And it's downright dangerous. It puts this entire community at risk. And I hope the community understands that what you're asking for is not unreasonable. You're asking for basic fairness, a livable wage, affordable and decent health care, and to be treated with dignity and respect on the job. Last week, I was in town for a council meeting, and our executive director, Roberta Lynch, said something that stuck with me. She said, "We are a fighting union. AFSCME is a fighting union, and we do not back down from a fight."
That's right.
So my brothers, sisters, and siblings of Champaign County, I want you to remember that. When you're reporting to work and coming to the bargaining table, remember that you are a fighting union, that you do not back down, and that you are not alone in this fight. Because we are your AFSCME family. We stand with you, we believe in you, and we are in this fight with you. And when we fight,
we win!
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 Solidarity, everybody!
Woo! Okay, let's try a few more. Everywhere we go,
everywhere we go,
people want to know,
people want to know
who we are.
We are.
So we tell them.
So we tell them.
We are the union.
We are the union.
The mighty, mighty union.
The mighty, mighty union.
The mighty, mighty union.
The mighty, mighty union.
With us today, Tracy Abman.
Yes.
Woo! Woo! Associate Director of AFSCME Council 31. Woo! Has been on many, 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 many picket lines. And is here for the special message.
Hand crazy!
What do we want?
Contract!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Contract!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Contract!
When do we want it?
Now!
What do we want?
Contract!
When do we want it?
Now!
When do we want it?
Now!
When do we want it?
Now!
Yeah, right. Okay, hello, Champaign County!
Associate Director of AFSCME Council 31 in Illinois, and I bring the support and solidarity of 100,000 active and retired members, some of whom are here today standing with you.
Yes.
Right? To the Champaign County workers who are here, I want you to know that when you join AFSCME, you join a big family,
yes,
as Tim said.
Yes.
And we have your back when times get tough.
Yes.
Right?
We do.
In fact, you know, as I said, we've got AFSCME members in here representing the corner of the state. We cheer you on when you win, and we are here when you need us. And frankly, all of us are inspired by the courage that you're showing by the strike vote that you've taken already. Am I right?
Yeah!
You are making your own history right now here in Champaign County, and it is a privilege and an honor. Plus a whole lot of fun for me to be here in support of this righteous fight. And I want to thank the workers for all the work that you do. As was said already, Champaign County could not function without your work. You work in almost every county department. You pave and repair the roads. You care for abandoned animals, right? You ensure justice is done at the courthouse. You keep our community safe at the county jail, and so much more. Here's what's up, though. Too often your work is unrecognized, unappreciated. You're overworked and underpaid.
Yeah. All right?
Yes.
All right. All right. And
It's time for your work to be recognized. It's time for you and your coworkers to be a priority. It is time, it's 170 days past time, right, for this county board to act and do the right thing. You know, your struggle is a struggle for dignity, for fairness, and for respect. And that is a righteous fight. It really says something about an employer who refuses to provide rabies vaccine to folks who are taking care of the animals. Right, I mean, really, seriously? What's up with that?
That is crazy. And
it says something about an employer who knows that they don't pay a living wage to their employees, who demand service and loyalty and excellence, and yet refuse to ensure those same workers can provide for themselves and their families. That's wrong! It's outrageous that people who serve this community day in and day out should have to take a son, a second and third job just to keep a roof over their family's heads. That just ain't right. But there is still time for management to do the right thing. There is still time for them to make you a priority. There is still time for the Champaign County Board to ensure that your health insurance costs are affordable, that your out-of-pocket costs don't skyrocket, and so that you can provide prescriptions that you and your families need. Talk is cheap. We need action, right? We've got county board members who say that they're pro-union, right? They say they care about your work, right? So we say enough talk. Time for action.
Yeah.
When do we want it?
Now.
When do we want?
Contract.
When do we want it?
Now.
We say show us the respect and dignity that you claim to have for us. Come to the bargaining table and make a fair offer. For years, our members have shown up and provided first-class services to the residents of Champaign County. Now it's time for the Champaign County Board and management to show up for you.
Yeah.
Now I know to the Champaign County workers, I know these are challenging times, but a 96% strike vote? Whoa! That is unity, right? That is determination. And we will stand with you as you stand up for what is right. You know, I know that together as your union, with the backing of your AFSCME family, that you will prevail. So let's say it together. Say, I believe that we will win.
That we will win.
I believe
that we will win.
That we will win. I believe that we will win.
I believe that we will win.
I believe that we will win.
I believe that we will win.
We're going to stand up. We're going to keep fighting till we get what's fair, and you will win. Thank you.
Board members here. I want to thank them, Brett Pugh, Samantha Carter. Thanks for coming. And our beloved county clerk, Aaron Ammons. Thank you for being here. And our county auditor, George Danos. Thank you for being here. Good to know we have some support, right? We asked them to go to the rest of their board members, to the county leadership, to the county executive, and let them know how devastating a strike will be. The county executive and the county board, they have the power here to prevent this from happening, right?
That's right.
So it's on them. We had mediation today. Thank the Lord we were able to get a mediator. You may or may not know that the federal government kind of shut down a few things, including federal mediation, but we were able to get one. She's trying to help us out, but there's still... They're still not listening, so we gotta be louder. What do we want?
Contract!
When do we want it?
Now!
What want?
Contract!
When do we want it?
Now!
Matt Kelly, who is the president of the Champaign County AFL-CIO, and a member of the United Association of Plumbers and Pipefitters here in town. He was going to speak. He had something to laugh. But he wanted me to pass on a message of hope and support to the members of Ask Me Local 900. We are never alone in this struggle, he said. The labor movement is large, and solidarity is at the core of its being. Even in dark days, we have to remember that we have the support of workers throughout Champaign County and beyond. I also spoke with Pat Devaney, Secretary Treasurer of the Illinois AFL-CIO, and a hometown boy. He also had something come up today, but he wanted to pass on his full-throated support and to let us know that we have the support from all over the state. Hundreds of thousands of labor union members across the state who stand up in support of you all. We are, I'll say it again, somebody else said it a few times, we are never alone in this struggle. We have support from all corners. So don't lose hope. We fight together. And when we fight,
we win!
When we fight,
we win!
When we fight,
we win!
Okay. So, before you leave, I got a job for you. Did everybody get a flyer?
Yeah.
If you didn't get a flyer, raise your hand. Somebody, if you didn't get a flyer, get one from somebody. You have a flyer that has a QR code on it.
Oh, yeah, they do that.
Okay? That QR code takes you to a link to write and send an email to the members of the Champaign County Board Labor Committee. And I'm going to call them now.
Turkeys.
Those are Emily Rodriguez, is the chair of that committee. John Farney is the vice chair.
He used to be an AFSCME member.
And a former AFSCME member. Yes, thank you. Aaron Esri is on that committee. Daniel Wiggs is on that committee. And Stephanie Furtado is on that committee.
Natalie.
They are the ones that can decide. They have the power to prevent this strike. I got 500 copies, so we're good. They have the power to prevent this strike. So we need you all to hit that QR code, send that email right now. Don't wait till you get home. Do it now. And then take that flyer to your workplace and ask your coworkers to do the same. Ask your family members to do the same. Now ask your dog. Don't ask your cat, because we all know that cats are management.
Cat slander.
Get that guy ready.
Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. So yes, stay tuned and I'll keep you all up to date and report back anymore on the situation with AFSCME. And whether or not they are able to make a deal on their contract with the Champaign County Commission, or if they do end up going up on strike. As I said, they have not ended up going on strike, but they have voted again the AFSCME, American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. What you heard was a picket. Or rally outside of the Champaign County Courthouse, and last month, 96% of votes were in favor of a strike if necessary. And the union's previous agreement with the county expired. It had expired at the end of last year. As I said, with major sticking points in negotiations. About pay and insurance. Just a little update. Yeah, as I said, as I reported about how hot it is, it's been with it being summer. You know, temperatures get up in the 80s, 90s. I'm sure I wouldn't be surprised if sometime during the summer if they reach up to 100. There is the summer cooling program. Speaking of Champaign County households interested in applying for the summer cooling program can start in doing so. The summer cooling program has started. It started on June 9th. The Regional Planning Commission will provide power bill assistance to Champaign County households at most risk from extreme summer heat. Eligibility criteria for the summer cooling program includes: you must be a Champaign County resident, your household's power service is disconnected or in immediate disconnect status, your household's most recent 30-day income must be at or below 200% of the federal poverty level, your household must include a senior age 60 and above or an individual with a medical certificate documenting a condition that requires active power in the household. The form that will be required to document a medical condition is available at ccrpc.org. Click on Divisions, Community Services, and then Summer Cooling Program. And then that's what I'm reading is what I just read is on the Summer Cooling Program when you click on it online. And appointments are available on a walk-in, first-come-in served basis from 8:30 a.m. to 3 p.m. on Mondays, Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Fridays. Wednesdays are from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And all this information, Regional Planning Commission's office is at the Brookings Administrative Center, 1776 East Washington Street, Urbana, at 2009 Round Barn Road in Champaign, and at the Rantoul Business Center, 601 South Century Boulevard, Suite 1314. All this information, as I listed, is on the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission's website, ccrpc.org, if you need that URL. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker, do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prayer Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. News program, pre-record program, is Letters to Washington, and it's talking about what's going on up there in Washington with the whole big, beautiful bill, which is very important information news. So that will affect many. So this is Letters to Washington that you're about to hear about that. That whole situation.
Show. Without nationwide injunctions, there'd have to be a challenge in every federal district court until ultimately the Supreme Court ruled. And in fact, even if the Trump administration lost in district after district, it could follow its policy every place else and never take it to the Supreme Court and continue to do some
Civica Radio's Letters and Politics. On today's show, a conversation with law professor Erwin Chemerinsky about the Supreme Court's decision undoing universal injunctions. But before that, I'll give you some of my thoughts about this so-called big, beautiful bill. That's next on Letters and Politics. But first, the news.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnested. Carrying symbolic coffins, opponents of gutting nearly $1 trillion in Medicaid funding while offering nearly $1 trillion in tax cuts for the wealthy and increasing spending on immigration raids and enforcement are marching to the halls of Congress at the nation's capital as senators debate President Donald Trump's budget and tax cuts package. It's hanging by a narrow thread. Here's Reverend Tanya Lopez from Los Angeles.
I'm deeply disturbed at this attempt to codify and legitimize state-sanctioned violence against all of us. Yeah. These combined cuts to life-sustaining programs and safety nets, coupled with the obscene amount of tax dollars allocated to the increase of surveillance and immigration enforcement, is exactly that. These are government-approved actions that will severely harm and that will expand the already excessive violence being perpetrated against the most vulnerable. This is the blueprint, the outline that is needed to make their cruelty sustainable.
The coffins had signs that read, "This coffin represents policy of murder." This is a new analysis by researchers at the Yale School of Public Health, estimates the cuts to Medicaid in the Republican budget and tax cuts plan will cause 51,000 preventable deaths. Cuts to Medicaid are what drove Republican Tom Tillis of North Carolina to vote against the bill, citing the impacts to his state.
So what do I tell 663,000 people in 2 years or 3 years when President Trump breaks his promise by pushing them off of Medicaid because the funding's not there anymore?
President Donald Trump said he'd find a challenger to Tillis. Tillis then said he will not run for re-election. Three GOP defectors could scrap the legislation. Rand Paul of Kentucky joins Tillis in opposition, though for different reasons. Paul of Kentucky cited the near $4 trillion debt it will add over 10 years. But Democrats today read a portion of the budget that said it would add $5 trillion to the nation's debt. Senate Leader South Dakota Republican John Thune defended cuts to Medicaid, saying it would only impact new enrollees, including those under the Affordable Care Act, like those who are able-bodied single adults who he said could work. Independent Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders called the budget and tax cuts package the worst piece of legislation in U.S. history. Today, Minority Leader Democrat Chuck Schumer accused the GOP of using faulty math to downplay the budget's impacts. Alex Gonzalez has more.
Democrats say Majority Leader John Thune broke Senate rules. They say after promising not to, he ignored a parliamentarian's ruling that the Medicaid and SNAP cuts to pay for the tax cuts for the wealthy are subject to filibuster. And Virginia's Mark Warner says they're massively unpopular.
It's not over till it's over. I will grant that President Trump has been able to hold his party in line in an unprecedented manner. At the other end, this bill will come back and bite them.
Trump is demanding he get to sign the bill on the 4th of July, but hurdles remain in both closely divided chambers. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
The United Nations nuclear watchdog estimates Iran could begin enriching uranium within a matter of months. This about a week after President Donald Trump ordered 30,000-pound bunker-busting bombs be dropped on three Iranian nuclear facilities. The new findings contrast Trump's claim the sites were totally obliterated. Meanwhile, the fragile peace deal brokered by Qatar and announced by President Trump appears to be holding. The Institute for Economics and Peace has released its Global Peace Index report for 2025 with a grim reading. It says the sixth consecutive year that global peacefulness has deteriorated, with global stability deteriorating for the last 17 years. Meanwhile, the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute has released its 2025 SIPRI yearbook, saying global military spending has increased every year for the last decade. Witnesses and medics in Gaza say Israeli forces have killed at least 22 people and wounded 20 others when they fired on crowds returning from a food aid distribution site at a United Nations and a United Nations warehouse. The Israeli military says it's reviewing the incidents. Palestinians have reported intensified Israeli bombings in Gaza City with widespread destruction as well. More than 500 Palestinians have been reportedly killed by Israeli forces at aid distribution sites run by the U.S. and Israeli-backed Gaza Humanitarian Foundation in southern Gaza. The United Nations is taking up the issue at the Security Council today. A Honduran woman arrested in Los Angeles with her young son and daughter are suing the Trump administration. The mother says she fears her 6-year-old son, who has leukemia, is not getting vital medical care at the detention center they're housed in Texas. The mother, identified in the lawsuit as Ms. Z, attended a court hearing last month where federal agents in plain clothes arrested the family. According to the lawsuit, the 6-year-old saw agent's gun and urinated on himself in fear. He was left in wet clothing for hours. He later reportedly missed a medical appointment related to his diagnosis this month because of the family's incarceration at a detention center. Assistant Homeland Security Secretary Patricia Laughlin told the British Guardian outlet, ICE always prioritizes the health, safety, and well-being of all detainees in its care. Meanwhile, the Fifth Circuit Court of Appeal today will hear a challenge to the Trump administration's use of the Alien Enemies Act to deport suspected immigrants out of the United States. World leaders are gathering in Spain for a high-level conference to tackle the wealth inequality growing between rich and poor countries and drum up trillions of dollars needed to close it. The United States, a major contributor, has pulled its participation of that meeting. I'm Christina Onnestad, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Good day and welcome to Letters and Politics. I'm Mitch Jezerich. The United States Senate has a bit of a problem. A big problem, actually. It's called the Big Beautiful Bill. It's so big and so beautiful that the Congressional Budget Office says that it'll kick off almost 12 million people from the Medicaid health care program for the poor over the next 9 years. While at the same time, it will grow the national debt by over $3 trillion. But that's not all. The Big Beautiful Bill is so big that it seeks to obscure almost all of the domestic accomplishments that were achieved by the previous president, Joe Biden. Access to health care expanded under the Biden presidency, and President Donald Trump now seeks to contract it. Joe Biden sought to forgive student loan debt, and this big, beautiful bill seeks to eliminate any remnants of what's still left from that effort. Now, the courts undid much of former President Biden's effort to undo student loan debt. However, whatever is left from that, well, this big, beautiful bill is trying to take care of that and eliminate that as well. The big, beautiful bill also seeks to undo all the initiatives concerning climate change that were found in the Inflation Reduction Act. Not quite the same name as the Big Beautiful Bill, but Inflation Reduction Act and Big Beautiful Bill seems like we're in a new age of a golden age of naming congressional bills. In short, this Big Beautiful Bill seeks to destroy almost all that was accomplished by the previous Biden presidency. They are trying to make sure to destroy the Joe Biden legacy, trying to paint his presidency as a disaster, that he was a feeble old man doing the beckoning of the woke left. That means you. We know he wasn't taking his orders from you, though. But many of his domestic policies, I think one can make a strong argument may be the most progressive policies we've gotten from a Democratic president, at least in my lifetime. I was born in the 1970s. It wasn't the New Deal progressivity, the New Deal progressive policies from FDR. Probably not the Great Society of LBJ years either. But the most of my lifetime. And just like conservatives have been trying to destroy the New Deal, even as it was happening, they tried to use the courts to stop it. They're trying to now do the same to Joe Biden's legacy. Not because they hate Joe Biden. Joe Biden, as a senator, which he spent most of his time as, was as centrist, mainstream, part of the establishment as you could possibly be. And everyone just kind of liked him. Obviously not Anita Hill, but others. But conservatives hate Joe Biden's policies as president. And that must be so utterly destroyed in the public imagination to make sure that it never happens again. It is true that Joe Biden was a feeble old man. It was clear for everyone to see, still is clear. When he ran for president in 2020, I saw it clearly. You see, I covered Joe Biden closely when I was a Capitol Hill reporter 20 years ago. Then, 20 years ago, Joe Biden was a lion in the Senate. He didn't struggle to find his words. He didn't struggle to express himself. He wasn't tripping up over his own sentences. No one ever talked about Joe Biden being a stutterer. I didn't know, and I covered Joe Biden every day. I didn't know Joe Biden was a stutterer until he ran for president in 2019, 2020. His biggest weakness 20 years ago was that conversely, he talked too much. And he frequently would just say things that were controversial that he probably shouldn't have said. I remember riding in an elevator once with him, and it was just the two of us. And, you know, there's that awkward silence when two people are in an elevator. And I've never been good with awkward silence since I'm in radio. And so I tried to break the silence by just asking him, so what's going to happen to the bill? And I was just chit-chatting. I didn't have my microphone out. I wasn't interviewing him. I didn't try to make it look like I was looking for a quote. I was just trying to alleviate the awkward silence in an elevator. But he, my God, he went into this long soliloquy that lasted far after we got out of the elevator. I mean, the guy loved to talk. And he would just keep talking. And I was a Capitol Hill reporter. I like to remind everyone, because I think it gives me a little bit of sense of the gravitas. It's all fake. But I wasn't like with the New York Times or the Washington Post or CNN. I was really a nobody. I reported for community radio stations. Small radio stations. You know, and he just kept talking. He talked my ear off. And so, yeah, he didn't have trouble expressing himself when I covered him as a Capitol Hill reporter. But then there was no question in my mind, and there really was no question in my mind when he ran for president in 2019 and 2020, that he experienced cognitive decline. I could see it. I mean, we all could see it. And yet, that said, he won the election, in large part because the incumbent was a madman. And he became president. And his presidential administration, on the domestic side, achieved a lot, especially if you compare it to previous administrations, Democratic administrations, especially over the last 50 years. And he did it in just 4 years. And what that illustrates to me is that, you know, the president's actually not that important. President's not actually running things, at least not at the micro level. The president is surrounded by helpers who are really smart, who know things, or at least you hope they're smart and know things. He has an entire cabinet. He has a chief of staff, and each of his helpers have a whole team of also equally capable helpers, ideally speaking anyways. Joe Biden didn't run the country, and neither does Donald Trump. It's the staff and the administration as a whole that does it. That's why you hope they pick good people qualified to do it. The truth is, Joe Biden could have gone into comatose if he had won re-election, and the country would have been just fine. There would have been political controversies over it, of course, because that's life. But the country would have functioned as it has always functioned. So believe me when I say, as somebody who watches conservative media a lot, they are doing everything they can possibly do right now to destroy the legacy of the Biden presidency, as though Biden needed help doing that. But they are trying to do it because of the domestic aspects of his presidency. They want those to never rear their heads again. Now, there is no question that the Joe Biden presidency is a complicated one. There's no doubt. He allowed the United States to be part in what most people probably see as a genocide in Gaza. And genocide is just a line a lot of people are not willing to cross, though maybe less than I once thought. It will haunt Joe Biden's legacy with the left for sure, and it should. It should. There are many ghosts to haunt it. Many of the mainstream human rights groups call it a genocide. The International Criminal Court calls it a plausible genocide as it does its process to determine whether or not it was a genocide. For me, even if it's plausible, you've already crossed the line. You've already gone too far. So the left will have a sense of disdainment for Joe Biden because of Gaza, and the right for his domestic policies. Not so different than the legacy of Lyndon Baines Johnson. His domestic policies to create the Great Society, to alleviate poverty, his war on poverty, his signing of the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act. I mean, these are all truly big, monumental things. And the right hated it. Hated it. And the left, they hated his war in Vietnam. And so Lyndon Johnson was basically forced to end his re-election campaign, as did Joe Biden. There's a lot of similarities there. Lyndon Johnson's war in Vietnam overshadowed what he achieved on a domestic level, which was huge. Joe Biden's legacy be overshadowed by Gaza, as it should. Again, genocide, less people than I thought at one time, but genocide for a lot of people is still a line people aren't willing to cross. But that, along with the rights, the conservatives' utter hatred of what Joe Biden achieved with things like the wonderfully named Inflation Reduction Act, which did nothing concerning inflation, but did a lot to fight climate change. They'll be overshadowed. And this is all going to make it harder. Or at least that's the idea of it, I think, to make it harder to bring in progressive policies in the future if everyone remembers Joe Biden's presidency as a disaster the same way they remember Lyndon Johnson's presidency as a disaster. To me, that's a lot of what this big, beautiful bill is actually about. And what a name. It's big and it's beautiful. What else would we expect the name to be coming from a man who names big buildings after himself? It's big, it's beautiful, and it's also a big problem for the Senate. Not just for Joe Biden's legacy, but for the Senate And it's a big problem for Republicans too. Because whenever you throw bombs, they don't just go off in one small space. There's bigger explosions. There's repercussions that occur. And this is a problem for the Republicans too, this big, beautiful bill. Right now, the Senate is involved in what is known as a vote-a-rama, which is just considering countless amendments. It's obviously not countless, it's not infinite, but a lot of amendments to this big, beautiful bill. There's a chance Republicans stick together and reject each one of them. But one amendment getting through can actually change the trajectory of this big, beautiful bill ever getting to Donald Trump's desk. And again, since just in the last few hours, the Congressional Budget Office reports that this measure is going to actually kick off more people from the Medicaid healthcare program from the poor than previously thought and is still going to grow the deficit. The idea is we want to tackle the deficit, so we have to reduce from these anti-poverty programs. But what they're really doing is extending tax cuts that mostly, though not exclusively, but mostly favor the wealthy. Saturday night on Capitol Hill was interesting. The Senate went late into the evening trying to get a majority to vote just to begin debate on this big, beautiful bill. And Republican leaders had to hold this vote open for 3 hours late into Saturday night as they tried to cajole and twist the arms and make deals with some of the less cooperative Republicans. Some of the Republicans who actually realize they live in big rural areas with poor folks, represent poor people who rely on Medicaid. And then some other Republicans like Rand Paul, who are concerned about the growing deficit. I mean, it's if you do a big, beautiful bill and try to throw everything into one bill, it's really hard to get it passed. It's much easier to actually do these one by one, each of these issues, you know, because it's also going to spend a lot of money on the military, a lot of money on the border. It's a big, beautiful bill. It's also, those things are hard to get through. And so they had to hold this vote open for 3 hours just to begin debate on the bill. It usually takes about a half hour to hold a vote in the Senate. This took 3 hours. They finally got the votes. They finally got them. They made some deals. One of the holdouts that they got to change her vote to support, maybe she didn't. She was threatening to vote no. She ended up voting yes to proceed to the debate, was Lisa Murkowski. And this story is an interesting story. Lisa Murkowski is a Republican senator with an independent streak from Alaska. They got her to vote in favor of beginning debate on this big, beautiful bill after making a deal that is particularly interesting. Now, Lisa Murkowski made a name for herself for being willing to go against the GOP leadership. She is seen as someone who is willing to vote against the party, even vote against Donald Trump. Perhaps today she is the version of John McCain in the Senate, and she probably has been for a while. In fact, her maverick status in the Senate is not new. In 2010, she made history by winning re-election, not as the Republican nominee, she was the incumbent, but as a write-in candidate. She lost the Republican primary to John Miller, who had the backing at the time of the once popular Sarah Palin. But instead of accepting defeat, Lisa Murkowski launched a write-in campaign to get Alaskan voters to write her name in the general election for Senate. And lo and behold, she won. She really won. And it's amazing considering her name, Murkowski, is not necessarily the most intuitive name to spell, not the easiest name to spell. And a write-in candidate hadn't won a major election for Congress like that since Strom Thurmond did back in the 1950s. And so after that election, I really know, maybe before, I didn't really pay a lot of attention to Lisa Murkowski before 2010, but afterwards, definitely. And to her credit, she remains, she still caucuses with the Republican Party, makes sure that, so her presence helps the Republican Party keep a majority in the Senate. But she has continued to be a difficult member for the party leadership and for Donald Trump. She's frequently one of just a handful of Republicans forcing leadership to make concessions. And so she had indicated she may not be able to vote for this, for the debate to begin on this big, beautiful bill, because she worried how cuts to Medicaid, a government-backed health care program for the poor, would result in many of her poor constituents losing health care. What she worried about was the work requirements that Republicans wish to implement in order for people to qualify for Medicaid. But in good old-fashioned politics, just in case you were worried that old-fashioned politics had completely died, sometimes I wonder myself, they made a last-minute deal with Lisa Murkowski that got her vote in favor of moving forward with this big, beautiful bill. And the deal would exempt Alaska from these work requirements for the Medicaid portion of the bill. Now, of course, they didn't say Alaska was exempt, because that would just look like corruption, which it is. Instead, they said any non-continuous state will be exempt, meaning any state that doesn't share a border with any other state. Well, principally, that's Alaska. And I guess Hawaii too. So congratulations, Hawaii. You are the beneficiary of Republicans' bid to make it look like corruption was not at the heart of getting Lisa Murkowski to vote for this, to at least to begin debate for this bill. We will have to see if she still votes for a final passage of this, perhaps later today. The Senate parliamentarian said if the Senate Republicans want to use, which is known as the budget reconciliation process. This is something we've talked a lot about in years past. This is a process that, as long as it's meant for budget bills, you can sidestep or avoid a potential filibuster from the minority to stop progress, as long as it is a spending measure, and as long as it doesn't increase the deficit for over 10 years, and as long as it's related to spending. Well, the Senate parliamentarian says, well, this isn't going to work.
Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, station management, the board of directors, or the WEFT associates. And that wraps up here on WEFT, where we were at. Please do keep listening to us here on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. And of course, listen to us on WEFT.org or the app, WEFT app on Apple and Google Play Store. I'm going to play another Beach Boys song. Hey, it's summer, and to kind of remember the great Brian Wilson, who unfortunately passed away a few weeks ago. But this is "Wouldn't It Be Nice" by the Beach Boys. Greatest hits. Have a good night. Please keep listening though to us here on WEFT.
Make it that much better when we can say goodnight instead. seems the more we talk about it, it only makes it worse to live.